your speech didn't have any references to Friday's number, so I was wondering how that kind of fits into the framework that you have in the text today.
You know, I think that when you're making monetary policy, it's really about outlook for the next 18 to 24 months. One jobs report has a little impact on that, but relatively modest. Those numbers are noisy; they move around. So I didn't change the text much in response to those numbers because it is just one employment report.
Does that mean you're looking through? You think that this is a blip? You're going to see?
You know, I put some weight on it, and it's something I'll be keeping in mind. I don't look through it in the sense that I'm going to be keeping it in mind when I come to the next employment report and start to see accumulating evidence, and then it starts to tell a story for you.
But just to broaden it out, are you concerned that we are starting to see more of a slowdown? This year won't be a year like last year.
So we only get good outcomes by making good choices, and I do worry about the ongoing conversation about tightening monetary policy being a drag on economic performance, both in terms of growth and in terms of employment outcomes. But as I say, one employment report is not where that story lies. It's really about the broader conversation about monetary policy being one of tightening soon or raising interest rates soon, and that conversation in and of itself tightens credit conditions and thereby is a drag on economic growth.
So is it a mistake to talk about tightening?
Well, I mean, it's in my perspective, it's premature to be talking about reducing accommodation through raising the target range for the Fed funds rate at this time. As I said in my speech, I'm under my outlook for the economy, it would be appropriate to raise the target range for the Fed funds rate in the second half of 2016. So talking about that now, talking about it as soon as June is premature, and what that means is that the contemplation of that is actually tightening credit conditions more than I view is appropriate given the state of the economy.
Backing up a little bit in your speech, this is actually moving forward a little bit. In your speech, you said it would be appropriate once you start raising rates to raise the target range for Fed funds rate to about 2 percentage points by the end of 2017. Did you mean this to be an endpoint for rate hikes?
No, not at all. No, my long run is for the target range for the Fed funds rate, the midpoint of that would be around 3 to 3.25%, something in that range. So I did not mean to imply that would be an endpoint. No.
Okay, and the 3 to 3.25, you would expect that to be take another year, or I mean, is this something you'd be willing to put a?
I'm not willing to offer a precise forecast at this time on that. It would depend on the evolution. Now we're really getting outside the range of my already weak abilities to forecast. So I think it would be very challenging to offer a precise number on that. I don't have much to say this time on that, on giving you an exact date on that.
How do you feel like if there's in talking about the second half of 2016, what if we get toward the end of the first half and then you're looking at a really substantial downturn or something like that? What's in the arsenal?
Oh, I think there's a number of things that are in the arsenal. We were buying assets as recently as last year. We could certainly buy assets again. That would be a response to untoward economic conditions. There's an argument to be made that we should be thinking about that right now. Versus facing inflation, inflation outlook, where we're not getting back to 2%. Until 2018, there's an argument made that we should be facilitating a more rapid recovery of inflation to target, and also then a more rapid recovery of employment to desirable outcomes through for example, through asset purchases. I think that there's I had suggested in the past that interest rate on excess reserves, 25 basis points is not necessarily a lower bound for the interest rate on excess reserves. It could be made lower than that. So I think there's, the point of that is not necessarily to say this is something I want done in April at the meeting, but more these are tools in the arsenal. If we feel that the outlook is not in keeping with achieving our goals in sufficiently rapid time, we can use them. And especially in the example you gave, the hypothetical of a downturn where we're starting to see a sharp slowdown in growth and employment growth and in inflation, there are our tools remaining. But that was your hypothetical, to be clear.
Just purely hypothetical.
Yeah.
It is, I think, in your speech, and maybe I missed it, do you talk about the unemployment rate at all? I mean, has this certainly you emphasize the EPOP ratio. I mean, is the unemployment rate sort of irrelevant at this point, or what's your thinking?
I think it's a great question, and I think that, you know, it's, you have a number of different metrics you want to look at for assessing labor market health. I think one of the reasons we're drawn to the unemployment rate is that it's typically been a better guide to inflationary pressures. And that's where, as I indicated in my speech, boy, there's a lot of slippage. First of all, there's been a lot of slippage over the history of the Federal Reserve between where unemployment is and where we think inflation is going to be. But really, the last 15 or 20 years of scholarly work has really cast doubt on how much power there is in the unemployment rate to help us forecast where inflation is going to go. So, you know, I think it's good that the unemployment rate has fallen as much as it has, back down to 5.5%. But it's even better when those decreases are coming from the quote-unquote the right way. That is, people finding jobs as opposed to people leaving the labor force. I think it's very hard for us to claim success with respect to the employment mandate simply because people are choosing to leave the labor force.
I mean, you did talk about the demographics, obviously.
Absolutely.
That changes that, and some people have also talked about potential cultural changes where folks maybe prefer a one-earner household now that they've had it for a while. This kind of thing. I mean, is that sort of out of the question?
It's absolutely not out of the question. The way that it'll materialize itself is by employers bidding a lot for the workers who are willing to work, pressing upward on wages and then spilling into prices. And then the outcomes, the 2006 outcomes that I pointed to, would not be consistent with 2% inflation as they were in 2006.
Yes.
And so that's where you would start to see it show up and materialize in your outlook. I think it's, as my speech was really about this, I think that the demographics I take on board, and there's a footnote in my speech which talks through some of the demographic considerations. They're relatively modest, I think, compared to the declines that we saw in the employment population ratio. I think the cultural, you know, that could be real, but I think it's also, we have to be really careful to simply bake in the outcomes as what we achieve. It's, we want to be very careful to guard against the risk of simply saying, boy, things have been bad for a long time. Maybe they're just going to keep being bad for cultural reasons or whatever, and so then setting that as our objective. You only achieve things through, and it's important if we aim for them, and it's important for people to know it helps the economy if they know the Federal Reserve is aiming for good outcomes.
What's the, how are you looking at, say, international developments now? We've seen there's been a beginning in Europe, and there's still these, I guess, two dozen other central banks have been easing just this year, and how are you, what kind of dashboard are you looking at to see how these things are affecting what you need to have your eyes on for U.S. policy?
You know, by and large, I think that the U.S., the fundamental impulse for the U.S. economy is a domestic one. It's not to say that foreign international conditions don't matter. They do. The strength of the dollar relative to other currencies is an input into the forecast. But it's we are as a, much more of a closed economy than many other our fellow central banks. Our fundamental impulse is to say a domestic one. And the other piece of this is monetary policy is forward looking. It's not about where we are today or what's happened to the dollar in the last 6 months. It's where are we going to be in the next 18 to 24 months. Again, I think the fundamental impulse for that is domestic. So plays a role, but it's I would say relatively modest.
And you just mentioned the dollar. Then the strength of the dollar is, has this played into your thinking?
I mean, I think it's the current strength of the fact that the dollar has strengthened over the past 6 months or longer. It's certainly been a drag on U.S. economic activity. It's you know, but it's measured in the point the after the decimal point kind of impact on growth.
What can you say?
So you're talking about something in the 0 to 0.5% kind of range in terms of impact.
And also, just to be clear, when you said in the speech, second half of 2016, and you also said that this you did give this, you know, perhaps 2% by the end of 2017, not to end there, but I think it's the first time you've actually said that. But looking at the dots, it looks like that's been sort of your long held, or that may have been your long held view. Is this a new? So just to make it clear, is this new thinking on your part? Is it a change from before? Is it
in terms of my public communications, it's the first time I've talked about this publicly.
But is it new in terms of your thinking? Have you been thinking second half of 2016 for?
Talking about first half versus second half in a given year, relatively modest changes in the economic outlook can influence that. So I guess I don't have a comment on that specific question.
Just looking at the clock here, I just want to make sure to ask about everyone's favorite subject, Congress. The banking committee staff is working away probably right now, and they're going to have a bill that everyone's going to be very interested in. Is there something that you think would be a best-case scenario to see what kind of legislation people are looking at, specifically with respect to the Federal Reserve structure and other things?
Yeah, I guess I've had a hard time, at least so far, understanding the problem statement. So, if you're adopting new legislation to change the Federal Reserve System in some fashion, what's the problem statement that you're trying to address? The problem for me, when I look at the outcomes, problem is inflation's been too low and employment's been too low. But I don't see the changes as being about trying to address that. For example, some of the conversation in the Federal Reserve and Accountability and Transparency Act is trying to institute the Taylor Rule as being some hardwired checkpoint for monetary policy. The Taylor Rule would make monetary policy even tighter than it currently is, would make inflation even lower than it is, make employment even lower than it is. So I don't see that tight mapping between the economic problems I see in the country and at least the proposals I'm familiar with in terms of what's floating around Congress. And that's, I think, would make it much easier. I assume it would make it easier for citizens, but it would make it much easier for me to understand what's going on, is if you can have a tight mapping between here's the problem, here's what we're going to do to fix it. In terms of outcomes, not some of this squishy appearance stuff, but rather here's what's wrong, and here's what we're, in terms of outcomes, and here's what we're going to fix on that.
What about the, This proposal by your former colleague in Dallas, is this something that would be a best-case scenario as opposed to something like a Taylor Rule being enshrined in legislation or even something as apocalyptic?
You know, I always learn from what Richard said, and with all respect for Richard, I didn't understand what problems he was trying to fix through his proposals.
What would be the reason why do you think is the... I've spent so much time on Congress this year. It just seems like there's been a change. What do you think is different about this year? Is there something that the Federal Reserve could do better or more to improve the relationship?
Yeah, it's you're getting into more into the politics sphere, I think. I mean, I think we should be the best we can do is be clear about what we're trying to achieve. and take actions to achieve those goals. And I think Congress would be being clear for us about holding us accountable for achieving those objectives. I think would be good.
If I could, talking about the connect between wages and unemployment, I mean, we're seeing some of Walmart, Target, McDonald's. Do you take comfort from that?
I think it's a sign that some of the forces that I talked about in my speech and others have talked about, that that there's the scarcity of workers is starting to put upward pressure on wages. That's a positive. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think that we're still not seeing, I think, broad-based wage pressures. And the other piece to emphasize here is our target is not really about wage inflation. Our target is about price inflation. And where the Phillips curve really struggles, you see it works better with respect to wage inflation. That is, low unemployment starts to push upward on wage inflation. It's a spillover into price inflation, which is actually much more tenuous. So just because wages are going to go up, may or may not spill into price inflation. When it will, those are the very hard judgments to make.
Well, I mean, in terms of, you did talk about how you're worried about talking about tightening now, you know, could sort of slow growth, could sort of slow the employment situation. I mean, how do you express that in the context of you know, what's happening? Everyone is free to say their views, and you just talked about how you don't really see any need to sort of change the structure. I mean, isn't there a do you have discussions with your colleagues, like, you know, put a lid on it, you're tightening conditions, or, you know, or I mean, do you have, I mean, is this a serious, I guess, I just, you do talk about, you know, when we're going to raise rates, and you obviously, I think, putting out those figures today.
Yeah, when I say, I don't have any real comment on that, I guess. I mean, I think it's good for us to be able to express our views and have people understand where we're coming from. So that's all positive. I think that it's, but nonetheless, it's true that that the ongoing conversation, which goes well beyond the FOMC, I mean, it's in media outlets, that it's goes well beyond the FOMC to discussion about near-term tightening of policy. That conversation of itself is a tightening of policy. So, but I think it's a positive that we communicate our perspectives.
Anything else?
I hate to let you go. I mean, even though this, I know you're not thinking about tightening right now. I know you're not thinking about reducing the balance sheet or anything like that. But just in terms of the tools that the Fed has when it does come time to raise rates, there's been a lot of talk recently that that overnight repo facility is going to have to be used to a much greater extent than sort of the Fed currently thinks. It's just, you know, they're going to have to use it, for longer. Do you have, what is your thinking of that? Is that a dangerous tool that you need to stop using as soon as possible, or do you mind if it's used? I know this is, you know, thinking ahead until 2016, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable with the set of tools we have in terms of achieving the objectives we need to achieve, which are prices and employment objectives over the medium term. I think the tools we have, interest and excess reserves and overnight reverse repo, will be sufficient to allow us to do that. And that's the question that should matter for us and for most Americans when they think about things.
Let me just ask one last thing. We haven't talked much about communications lately. Where is this something that's going to have to wait also until 2016? There hasn't been a whole lot of talk about what the subcommittee's doing. And I'm just curious how your thinking has been evolving. We've heard a lot from another Fed president from a nearby region in Cleveland, but the conversation doesn't seem like it's been... There's not a lot that seems like it's on the near term radar as far as communications policy.
you know, I think communication is in constant evolution of the Federal Reserve, and I'm not on the subcommittee, but I'm sure they're hard at work thinking about these issues on an ongoing basis.
But is there anything that your personal thinking has been evolving in the last few months?
I don't have anything really deep to say on that point. So.